And how they bridge the gap between the academia and exhibition making, particularly in terms of how this particular type of curator tends to draw from a kind of interdisciplinary approach that is very much entrenched in their practices as scholars, and how they bring that to their curatorial practices, right? So kind of how those two come together. So as you probably guess, the title, Southeast Asia as Method, is taken from a very important book by Professor Chen Guansing, Asia as Method Toward De-imperialization, one of our most favorite books, and really talks about taking Asia as an imaginary, as an anchoring point in which we do a kind of inter-referentiality within Asia to multiply frames of references. So basically, what this book tries to do is to say that the West has been overly universalized, while whatever that's non-West has been overly particularized. So there needs to be a rebalancing, and that can be done through Asia as Method in a kind of inter-referencing each other. So rather than referencing the West, for example, you would choose somewhere within Asia as your reference point. So that's a kind of a method. It's also very self-reflexive. It deals with problems and issues emerging from very concrete lived experiences. I talk about Asia as Method because I see a lot of connections between what Chen Guansing is talking about and what these scholar curators in Southeast Asia are also kind of dealing with in terms of their curatorial practices. And I'll show that in a while. So a bit of background, a book by Patrick Flores, Professor Patrick Flores. He published this book, Past Peripheral Curation in Southeast Asia, which is really a book about the history of curation in the region. And he zoomed in on the particular type of curator he called the artist curator that emerged in the 1970s and 80s in Southeast Asia. And this artist curator were basically both artists as well as curators. So they performed both roles in the 70s and 80s because there was no such thing as a curator in Southeast Asia, right? For various reasons, there was a lack of the development of museums that produce curators. There was no curatorial programs. I'll come into that in a while, more about that. So he focused on the artist curator as an Asian provocateur who straddled the practices of curating, art making, art history, art criticism. So wearing many hats, as you can see. So that was the kind of an interesting phenomenon that emerged in Southeast Asia, the artist curator. To give a brief background, this is really overgeneralizing, but to give you a sense of the curator in Southeast Asia, there's really an absence of curatorial programs in Southeast Asia. You do not have any universities that offers curatorial programs. I might be wrong, but to my knowledge, I think there is no curatorial program offered in any university in the region. We do have very ad hoc programs, like in Singapore, we have Curating Lab. It's a six-month program funded by the National Arts Council in Singapore. And it's really open to young aspiring curators. And they are kind of mentored by more experienced curators. And then eventually they develop an exhibitionary project. And they also travel around the region. I believe they met Uchok Aminuddin Seriga as well in Itibe, yeah? I believe one of their trips. So, but it's a kind of, it's not a very structured program in that sense. Pedagogy is also quite questionable because these are ultimately curators, kind of mentoring curators. So it's more of a master-apprenticeship kind of relationship. There's lack of art history programs in the region. Again, we don't have an art history department within any of the universities in Southeast Asia. Art history is, however, taught as maybe as a module in some of the fine arts programs in Southeast Asia, but never as an art history department. That simply does not exist. There's also a close relationship between curators and galleries. So what has happened is that, by and large, if you were to ask most of the curators in Southeast Asia, most of them do not have a kind of proper academic grounding in curating. Most of them actually learn curating by doing it, so by practice, right? So it's more of that. So in a sense, they're mostly self-taught in Southeast Asia. So I'm going to talk about the scholar curators in the 1990s. So in the 70s and 80s, we had the artist curator, yeah? And in the 1990s, I'm making an argument that there's this emerging group of an imagined intellectual community that I call the scholar curators. And they traverse the fields of academia and curation. Most of these scholar curators are embedded in a university or in a university museum or an art college, right? Most of them. And some of them also emerge from art institutions like the Singapore Art Museum. And most of them, not all, but most of them were educated overseas and then they came back. Yeah. So I'm going to go through some of these scholar curators and just briefly pick up, due to time constraints, some of their most important contributions in which they bridged the academia and curating. So I subconsciously kind of listed them in terms of seniority, in terms of age, I realized in the end. So we have first adjunct professor T.K. Sabapathy, and he teaches art history at the National University of Singapore Department of Architecture, as well as the Arts Design Media that's at the Nanyang Technological University. And then we have Professor Apinan Poshananda from Thailand. He used to teach at the Chulalongkorn University, but he has gone to bigger things. So now he's in the Ministry of Culture. Redza Piyadasa, the late Redza Piyadasa, he has passed away, but he used to lecture at the University of Technology Mara in Malaysia. Professor Masahiro Isoro Soji, and he's a professor at Kyushu University. Patrick Flores, he's at UP, University of the Philippines. He's also curator of the Vargas Museum. Ahmad Mashadi, he's the head of the NUS Museum, that's in the National University of Singapore. Professor Nora Taylor, she's at the School of Art Institute of Chicago. She's also an art historian. And of course, Aminuddin Siriga, whom I believe you have heard from him this morning. And he is the director of Gallery Sumaja at Institute of Technology of Bandung. So he's also a lecturer as well as a curator. So first of all, T.K. Sabapathy. And his first exhibition was in 1996, Modernity and Beyond, Themes in Southeast Asian Art. And that show inaugurated the Singapore Art Museum. And he adopted a kind of comparative approach for the first time, because prior to that, the art histories of the various countries in Southeast Asia was very much circumscribed by nation-state boundaries. So he widened the terrain of art history from the national to the regional, and he adopted a thematic approach to understanding Southeast Asian art for the first time. It might sound really strange to you, but yes, it was as late as 1996 that we started to take a thematic comparative approach to look at Southeast Asian art. And I think most importantly, he has always advocated a calibrated terminology. I'm going to talk about that, more about that in a while. So this was the exhibition Modernity and Beyond in 1996, and you have a picture of the Singapore Art Museum. And this is one of the gallery shots of the show. Coming back to calibrated terminology, he says that critics, and I quote him, critics and historians of art will have to step outside their prescribed privileged grounds and become familiar with different or other models of articulating discussion or accounts of artistic practices and values. And among these are also to be new or different usages of employing terminology which has art historical origins in the West. So this was really one of the main problems facing scholarship as well as curation in Southeast Asia. It's really about terminology, because most of the terms that we use and when we talk about Southeast Asian art came from the West. And very much still continue to do so. So how do we develop a calibrated terminology that adopts terms, concepts that come from the region itself and that's relevant to the region itself? So that's one of the biggest kind of challenges that we face, and we still continue to face this same problem today. And by asking critics and historians to step outside their prescribed privileged grounds, he was really calling for historians and curators to go out to do your fieldwork. Go out to talk to the artists, go out to interview the artists, find out what they themselves think and talk about their art. What are the terms that they use? So that was his call. I don't think it was ever kind of taken up seriously. I hope something will change. Most recently in 2012, so 1996 is his first show. In 2012, he curated an exhibition, Intersecting Histories, Contemporary Turns in Southeast Asian Art at the ADM Gallery. at the Nanyang Technological University. So it's really a historical approach to look at contemporary art in terms of its turning points. What are the contemporary turning points? And he identified a few, being conceptualism was one turning point, and he looked at collectivism as another turning point. So these are the various turning points that he identified as a kind of art historical context of contemporary art in Southeast Asia. Next, another scholar curator is Professor Apinan Pochananda. And incidentally, he was also an artist curator in the 70s and 80s. People tend to forget that he was one of the most important media artists, and he showed this work, How to Explain Art to a Bangkok Cox. And that was in 1985. But then he decided he had a higher calling, and so he shifted towards being a scholar curator by the 1990s. The most important book written by him, Modern Art in Thailand, is still the only art historical account of Thai art. And he also curated arguably one of the most important exhibitions in the 1990s, Traditions, Tensions, Contemporary Art in Asia, organized by the Asia Society in New York. But the most important concept for me that he talked about is actually copying as authentic. So he was talking about multiple, in a way, different ways of understanding modernities as multiple modernities in Southeast Asia, and how in Southeast Asia, copying is regarded as a way in which an artist could engage with modernity. And Phua Harapitak, the late Phua Harapitak, a very important modern Thai artist, he practically single-handedly revived Thai muralism by going to the different temples in Thailand and doing his temple rubbings, as you can see. And so he did a lot of temple rubbings, and he started to incorporate a lot of this lost iconography back into modern Thai painting. So he was trying to reinvent modern Thai painting by kind of studying these iconographies that he recovered from temples in Thailand. So copying as a way in which one could reach a certain different type of modernity that's different from the West. The late Retza Piyadasa, like Apinan Pochananda, he was also an artist curator who was very active in the 70s and 80s. This is his work, arguably one of his most famous works, of a coffin painted with the flag of Malaysia, and is titled May 13, 1969, which was the day of the racial riots in Malaysia that has defined the history, the cultural, the politics of Malaysia ever since, even till today. And he collaborated with another artist, Sulaiman Issa, and they came up with an exhibition, Towards a Mystical Reality, in 1974 in Kuala Lumpur. And what they did was to call for a different way of thinking about and making art that drew not from Western art theories, but from Taoism, from Zen, a different concept of time. So you see a circle. So thinking about mystical time rather than linear time, because they found linear time as something, a time that's very much dominated by a Western notion of it, and they wanted to think about other ways of thinking about time. So this exhibition showed works like this one, Empty Bird Cage, after release of Bird at 2:46 p.m. on Monday, 10th June, 1974. And then you have this shadow of Isman Wang. So it's a very important Malaysian poet on the painting. So these were the other works that were shown, like randomly collected sample of human hair on the bottom right. So it's a completely different way of understanding reality that is against Western perceptualism, and they were calling for a different way of understanding different types of realities. So next is Professor Masahiro Yusoro Soji, right? So he's a good friend of Uchong and mine. My favorite photo, I took him when he was smoking. It's one of my projects, which is to photograph all curators who are smoking. I really love that. Which is strange because I'm a non-smoker, but anyway. And he curated this show in 1992 in Japan, New Art from Southeast Asia. And he's also a scholar curator. I mean, he's also a professor. He's now currently a professor at Kyushu University. And he came up with a different idea, a concept of the new, And I'm quoting from him. So the changes in the art scene in Southeast Asia, namely the appearance of new subject, new forms of art, and the materials come from the desire of artists to engage with societies in which they live and the real world surrounding them. And I really underline the word real world. So what he was trying to really talk about was how artists in Southeast Asia were dealing with installation, performance, dealing with new subjects in response to new realities happening in the changing societies in Southeast Asia. So he saw Asian artists, Southeast Asian artists, as responding to those new realities and therefore creating new art forms from that. So he was trying to pull away from saying that this concept of new art that was producing in Southeast Asia came directly from the West, but there are multiple points of origins or multiple frames of references in what Chen Kuan-Sing would say, in which Southeast Asian artists were trying to find different references, not necessarily from the West, but references from Asian philosophies, Asian theories, and so on. He also curated, I think it's his most important show, the Fourth Asian Art Show in 1994, so Realism as an Attitude. So you can see the kind of connection between his earlier show about new art in Southeast Asia, talking about the real conditions, concrete social, cultural, political shifts happening in Southeast Asia, and he connected that to how that's realism, how Asian artists, Southeast Asian artists were struggling with this new concept of reality, right? Different types of realisms occurring in the region, and how to deal with that. So he incorporated a lot of so-called artworks like rickshaw painting. These works are in a collection of the Fukuoka Asian Art Museum because previously he was a chief curator there before he became a professor. And he incorporated a lot of this kind of artworks that one would not consider as an artwork, like rickshaw painting. So he called it traffic art and included that in the museum's collection as well. Next is Patrick Flores from the University of the Philippines. And he curated Turns in Tropics, the artist curator at the 7th Gwangju Biennale in 2008, showing works by Apinan, Poshyananda, Jim Supankat, Retza Piyadasa. So some of these artists I've just mentioned who are artist curators and then also scholar curators as well. And I think what's important about Patrick Flores is his idea of reenacting exhibitionary histories, the idea of the curatorial gesture, in framing what is often a kind of overlooked importance of exhibitions in Southeast Asia. Next is Ahmad Mashadi, and he's currently the head of the NUS Museum, and he curated this show at the Singapore Art Museum called Telatabit Art Now. Really, what it does is to contextualize the history of conceptualism in Southeast Asia. I'm sure some of you are familiar with another show, Global Conceptualism, Points of Origin. So this really is a show in dialogue with that, to show how conceptualism wasn't just something that emerged in the West, but there are so many different points of origins and so many different ideas of conceptualism that emerged. And Southeast Asia, of course, produced its own point of origin in terms of conceptualism. So these are just exhibition shots of Telatabit. And recently he curated a show, or rather he worked with Lai Chi-Kien on A Brief History of Malaya. This is a book that's been translated into English. It's in Chinese, it was translated into English. And he curated a show based on a close fidelity to the book. So the chapters of the book are reflected in the chapters of the exhibition. And he tried to search for the artworks that the artist talked about and showed it in the exhibition in an almost archival documentary way. So I see this interesting intertextuality that, you know, Ahmad Mashadi brings into his curating, which is, for me, defines what a scholar curator does, the kind of intertextuality, the kind of bringing of discourse into curatorial practice. Professor Nora Taylor, she doesn't curate that much, but she did curate one show, Changing Identity, which I think is important because she's looking at marginalized communities like women artists in Vietnam, something that's always overlooked by most curators in the region. And she deals with the issue of gender. And she's also always called for an ethnographic approach to writing about and curating Southeast Asian art. And last but not least, we have Aminuddin Siriga,
Uchok.
You know, it's just behind. I think this is a nice picture of you, yeah? I found it from the internet. Yeah. Anyway, this was a show he co-created with Ahmad Mashadi called Archiving Arpin, Works and Documents from the Mokhtar Arpin Collection. So Mokhtar Arpin is an important Indonesian artist. He's regarded as the father of graphic art in Indonesia. Uchok adopted archiving as a kind of entry point to excavate the memories, histories, and practices of Mokhtar Arpin. So this issue of archiving as a methodology is also, I think, very interesting. So coming to my second last slide, Southeast Asia as method, so bridging the gap between academia and curation. This is just a brief summary, I think, of the different approaches, methods, and theories that scholar curators as an emerging intellectual community have advanced the last 20 years since the 1990s. It's a comparative approach, the kind of inter-referencing Southeast Asia, interdisciplinary, certainly contextual. So in methods, he has been very self-reflexive as a methodology. And I think increasingly there is a desire to frame Southeast Asia within a larger global context, global histories. The use of ethnographic discourse analysis, reenacting histories, intertextuality, archiving. I think all these different methodologies lead to a sense of multiplying frames of references. In terms of theories, they have drawn from very, very diverse, from Asian philosophies, Western philosophies, alternative forms of knowledge, hybridity, post-colonial theories, and so on. And coming back to my last slide, Southeast Asia's method, an imagined intellectual community of scholar curators. I think they are also particularly important because I see them as part of a group of intellectuals who are also part of a project of decolonization in a sense of decolonizing the mind. If you look at, like, for example, the late Pia Dasa in Towards a Mystical Reality, an exhibition that he curated, it's really about looking at other, you know, Asian philosophies. And in that way, it's really about trying to break out of the domination of a Western concept or Western production of knowledge to look at, are there other references that we can draw from? So I see that as really part of the process of decolonization of the mind that is really important, that I think many of the scholar curators actually do in one way or another, which is important because it challenges the neoliberal capitalistic domination of knowledge as well as cultural production. And the scholar curators very much ground their practices, their curatorial practices, in academic theory and knowledge that is, I think, increasingly trying to frame it from within the region, kind of like alternative theories and knowledge that is not necessarily Western. Yep. And also linking it to the concrete practices of artists. They also look at subaltern and marginalized groups like Nora Taylor, in how she's looking at marginalized Vietnamese artists, women artists as well. So scholar curators, I think they emphasize criticality and self-reflexivity. And I think they differ from many other curators. And I see them as an imagined intellectual community precisely because their curatorial practice is grounded in scholarship. And that really, I think, distinguishes them from many other curators. Unfortunately, many curators in Southeast Asia, as I mentioned earlier, tend to work with galleries because, of course, they need to survive. But it's a kind of a practice that is ultimately circumscribed by the global capitalist logic, because ultimately galleries need to sell something. So whatever they produce in terms of cultural knowledge is circumscribed by that. I don't see a way out for them in that sense. So I think scholar curators as a type of curator, as an imagined intellectual community, is really important, and they are starting to close the gap between academia and exhibition making, which I see as something that's lacking in Southeast Asia. So hopefully that would be a direction that curation in Southeast Asia would continue, as we will see more scholar curators emerging. Yeah, thank you.